First of all, welcome back. Thank you, Dr. Yeager, for sponsoring today for the option of Rafal Meir, grandson, God willing. It should be the beginning of a career of love of Torah, like that runs in the family. So, folks, let's start at the very beginning. Basic question. We're learning about, trying to learn about a series of values from the Avos, certain values and characteristics that we can imbibe, we can take away. Basic question, we're looking at Yitzhak Avinu. When we think about Yitzhak, there are a few things we have much less to dig our teeth into in his life than we did with Avraham. Avraham has many parashiyos. Yitzhak has fewer, but the value that I want to speak about is let's learn about starting parashas Vayera is sacrifice. Okay, when we look at Yitzhak Avinu, thinking about sacrifice, Yitzhak Avinu made many sacrifices in his life, and one of which was his basically everything he has, himself, his life. So before even starting this discussion, very basic question. Did the Ribbono Shel Olam, did HaKadosh Baruch Hu want the Akedah? Did HaKadosh Baruch Hu want Avraham Avinu to sacrifice Yitzchak? Sometimes we have long discussions about, you know, the Akedah and the Mefarshim and the Psukim. Basic question, did he want it or not? What do you think? Okay, just by a show of hands quickly. Who says yes? Who says HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it? Hashem was serious about it. Okay, those who said no? Okay, fine. So we have a large no audience here. So it's interesting. It is interesting because it sounds like Hashem is very serious about it, right? Hashem says it in pretty unequivocal terms. Ha'aleu sham la'ola. Hashem says bring him up as an ola. However, it is interesting.
If he didn't, how could it be a test?
Right, how could it be a test if he wasn't serious about it? It's interesting, though, in retrospect, so when we read this in retrospect, with hindsight, the Gemara tells us, quoting the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, let's take a look at source 1, it says, it's talking about the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, and I just want to read the entire Pasuk to give context, because sometimes when you just hear a little piece of the Pasuk from the Gemara, we don't get the full context. Here's what the Pasuk actually says. In Yirmiyahu, Perek Tes, Pasuk Yud Hei. He's talking about how Bnei Yisrael or human beings have left HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and what did they do? He says, this is not in the sources, Uvanu es ha-bomos ha-Baal, they built these altars of Baal. Baal's the god that they serve. Lisrof es b'neihem ba'esh, to burn their children in fire, or lois la-Baal, as burnt sacrifices to Baal, asher lo tzivisi, v'lo dibarti, v'lo also alibi, which I did not command, did not speak about, and I did not even imagine, so to speak, Kiviyachol HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. That's what Hashem says about this child sacrifice. By the way, I just mentioned yesterday, but like up in Phoenicia, up the coast, you know, when you go further north from Israel, they've discovered, you know, in Carthage, they've discovered finds where they have urns, like earthenware urns with ashes in them. And these are genetic remains of children that were sacrificed. And if you actually see, it's interesting over there that they are inscribed with the Ugaritic letters MLK. Not as a forerunner for Martin Luther King, right? But as Molech, right? They sacrificed their children to Molech. This was it, right? When early on, when Yirmiyahu talks about Bomas HaTofes, there was this valley in Gei Ben Hinnom, where Menashe and later on his son Amon, they set up that shop to sacrifice children. So Yirmiyahu says, Asher loy tzivisi. I didn't want it. The Gemara says that the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so emphatic, the way that he says it in this response to all these folks over here doing this in the Middle East, tells us that there's actually more to what Hashem is saying than meets the eye. Take a look at the Gemara. This is the Gemara in Tanis in Source 1. The Gemara on the first page. Uksiv, Asher lo tzivisi v'lo dibarti v'lo alsa libi. Asher lo tzivisi, that I didn't command, ze benoi shel mesha melech Moav. So there's a particular episode that happens in the beginning of Menachem Beis, where there's an alliance formed between the king of Israel, the king of Yehuda, and Edom. Three kings go to fight against Moab. Fascinatingly enough, why Edom? Edom at this point is a taxpayer to Yehuda. It's a very strong time in the nation of Israel. They both all fight against Moab, and it says at the end of the battle, it says that he sacrificed his son. It's not clear, the Mephoroshim debate, what really happened. Was it that the Melech Moab actually had as a prisoner the son of the Melech Edom, and when losing the battle, publicly burnt him as revenge against Edom siding with Israel? Terribly cruel individual. Or was it that he realized the reason why he lost this battle, and it was a miraculous battle, right? What actually happened, the water appearing out of nowhere, was the fact that this battle was won was because the Bnei Yisrael had the schus of the Akedah. So he says, well, if this works, let's try it here. Right? And that's what he did. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Asher lo tzivisi, I didn't want that. Don't do that. Don't give me your children. V'loi dibarti, the Gemara continues in the second line. Ze Yiftach. Well, this is Yiftach. What happened with Yiftach? Right, Yiftach made this foolish neder. He said, whatever comes out, Midal Se Beisi, which comes out from the doors of my house, I'm going to bring it to Hashem. Machlokes as to what really happened there in the end of the day. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I didn't want it, Yiftach. That wasn't my intention. And finally, V'loi al salimina, I never even imagined it. Hashem says, Ze Yitzchak ben Avraham. I didn't want it. Now, that's so strange because it sounds like he wants it. You know, in fact, Rashi says that at the end of the day, when Hashem says, Va'aleu Shom La'ola, Rashi says, no, the word Ha'aleu just means, just bring him up, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu's words were never empty. In the end of the day, Avraham Avinu brought him up the mountain and he brought him down the mountain. Right? So the words of Hashem never became empty, but it sounds like that's what he's meaning because, you know, Avraham Avinu could just say, you know, it was all a big misunderstanding. Right? Up. Sacrifice, very etymologically similar words, I made a mistake. What happens if the mistake had been made? Very difficult to understand. So the starting point of the discussion is if Hashem does not want it, then why is he doing it? What is this almost sacrifice showing us or giving us if at the end of the day it wasn't what Hashem wanted? Loyal Salibi, he didn't even imagine it, so to speak. That's the starting point. Okay, so it's easier to understand the discussion when we know the end point. That's the end point. So I'd like to learn with you really three remarkable ideas. One is the Ramban, one is Rav Huttner, and then finally the last idea is a greater idea which affects us on a daily basis. So here we go. Let's start at the very beginning. The Ramban on the Torah says tells us a paragraph, and this is an example of where, you know, you need more. Meaning to say, we learn this Ramban, and this Ramban is the most accessible part of his writing about this concept, but, as you can see, the logic is very terse, it's very, very short, and we need him to help us out, and the good news is he actually explains this in another place. So we're going to compare what he says in the Torah and what he says actually in the Shara Gemul to help us understand what's going on here. So he has his comment on the Torah, very short comment. V'elokim nisa es Avraham, in source 2, Hashem tested Abraham, Inyan ha-nisayon. What does nisayon mean? This is the first time the Torah is talking about nisayon. Hula da'ati ba'avur heyos ma'ase adam reshus mukhletes biyadai. Seeing as a human being has absolute choice, the Ramban is an advocate over here in the spectrum of yediyah and bechira, or gzeira and bechira, of free will versus Hashem's will. He says a human being has absolute choice. A person is always able to make choices. Im yirtzeh ya'aseh, im yirtzeh lo ya'aseh. A person can always choose. Therefore, yikre nisayon mitzad hamenuseh. A nisayon is not because of the person administering the standardized test, right? That's not the nisayon. That's not the test. It's from the side of the testee who is having it. Aval hamenuseh hamenaseh ha'yisparach. The tester Hashem yitzave bo lahotzia davar min hakoach el hapoal lios schar maaseh tov lo schar leiv tov bilvad. What's the point of nisayon? Is to extract something from potential to actuality. That's what the Ramban says. The purpose is not from Hashem's perspective, meaning to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what Avram is capable of, but Avram does not know what Avram is capable of. So therefore, the test is for Avraham to be able to extract that. Very short. We need a little more here. Let's expand this Ramban a little bit, just to appreciate looking at this from a holistic perspective. The Ramban writes a sefer called Taras HaAdam. Taras HaAdam is primarily halachic. It's about avelus, it's about mourning, and at the end of it, he has a gate or a section called Shar HaGemul. Gemul literally means reward and punishment. And this Shar HaGemul is fascinating. It's, for me, it was an eye-opener in the sense that it's the first time that you have somebody who takes everything, all the Gemaras that we hear about, a little bit about Olam Haba there, a little bit about Gan Eden there, a little bit about Chiyas HaMeis in there, and he synthesizes it all into one system. Brilliant, brilliant. It really puts everything together, because sometimes we're just left with little pieces, and he puts it all together into one synthesizer. And they publish it separately right now as well. But it technically is the last section of Taras HaAdam. And what's fascinating about this is, so he's talking a lot about suffering. Because that part of understanding reward and punishment is trying to understand how it is that human beings suffer so terribly. So he talks about various models, and it's important to know this because it's not simple that when a person is going through some difficulty, that it's necessarily one or another way. There could be numerous alternatives as to what's going on. So the Ramban talks about when a person has to do a cheshbon for the things they transgressed, the opportunities they missed. The Bittul Torah means there are even more subtle opportunities that they missed. So the Ramban talks about that model. Then he talks about kapara as a notion of sort of cleansing. And then he talks about nisayon. And he says, look, there's a separate idea called nisayon altogether from all other realms of schar v'onesh. And he says the following. In source 3, we're going to start at the beginning, or towards the end of the first line. He says, "Umahu hanisayon hazeh." What does this mean? Shiyavo aleihem b'avodaso shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, uv'asiyas mitzvah v'morem torach v'amal. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives a person sometimes tension. So it's almost like, you know, on the treadmill, the grade is being increased. It's hard to pull to pull the floor with you, right? It becomes more tense to be able to do that. There are many people who can serve God when it's even keel, when it's cruise control sailing enough. But should the grade reach a certain point, it's much harder to serve God at that point in time. It's much harder to go to davening then. It's much harder to do mitzvahs, to give tzedakah in times when one's pressed, when it's not as easy. So sometimes Hashem grades up the tension when a person's trying to serve Hashem in particular instances. So he makes it just a little more difficult for those. By the way, who's the object of the sentence? Yerei'ov. What's Yerei'ov? Those who fear him. So the Ramban is of the opinion, he says in the previous part of the paragraph, that it's not everybody. It's like sort of like the potter. People think, everybody likes to ask English people South African to say Harry Potter. So, it's when the potter wants to check his pots. What he does is he hits the pots, but he doesn't hit the weak pots because they'll break. So he takes the harder ones to hit them to make sure that they are sufficiently strong, because they're going to obviously be worth more money when he sells them. So he takes Zeri'ov, the stronger of those who can manage it, and he ramps up the tension in their service. So that they should have increased reward by doing it under strength. So why does he have to test them? Surely Hashem knows under which circumstances. I'm sorry, Shlomo. I think we were just out. A person, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, knows right or wrong. If this person, Hashem knows exactly the moment when this person will have to throw in the coat, throw down the towel, and say this is too much. Right? Hashem knows that point. So why does Hashem need to do this? He says, "Aval pikein." There's no comparison between a human being who's had to work against tension and do something to a person who's a good Jew at heart, a wonderful person, a believing individual, a person who's willing to do things but hasn't yet done them. So Ubinimsam is Akeos Olaitzi Drachova Tovim Lepoalu Maase. Hashem gives them opportunity. I'm going to allow you to work against terrible tension to show me your mettle. Lama nikra nisayon? Why is it called a nisayon? V'aloi akol tzafui lefonav yisparach. Hashem knows everything. Afal pikein rishus adam biyadai im yirtze yaseh v'im yirtze lo yaseh. These are the words he uses in the Torah. Person can always choose what he wants to do. Nimsa oisa achot zim naseo ha-mitzaveh al mitzah zu bevadai lefichach nikra nisayon mitzada oiseh v'lo mitzada mitzaveh yisparach shmoy. So the test is on the side of the testee. Do you notice, by the way, the extra meat that the Ramban is given to this explanation now? So when we go back to his Pirush on the Torah, it's much easier to understand, right? So this is where the Ramban looks at this. Just to appreciate this, you know, in terms of like, you know, physics. So when you look at like a simple system of physics, when we're talking about, you know, sound energy, you know, heat energy as an example. So when you just talk about two basic forms of energy, kinetic energy and potential energy. So, you know, so for instance, so when you hold like an item up above the ground, at this point in time, it has 100%. It has 100% potential energy. It's not moving, and as it falls down, what happens is as it's moving downwards, the potential energy is decreasing, and the kinetic energy is increasing to the point that it hits the ground where it's fully kinetic energy and is no longer potential energy. And the rule of conservation of energy says that there's never excess, or there's never lost energy in a certain sense. A system will always maintain its energy, which means to say that this is fascinating. If that's true, therefore, if you hold a tissue box, let's say, above a table, it has a certain grade of potential energy. If you hold it above the floor, suddenly its potential energy is increased because the potential energy is a function of distance. That means to say the higher you hold the tissue box, the more potential energy it has. But that's not really fair. You see, the tissue box hasn't done anything yet. Right? The tissue box has simply moved over a greater void. Isn't that interesting? But it hasn't done anything. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what? I see in you an incredible amount of energy, an incredible amount of potential energy. And in fact, I can put you over large ravines and you even have even more potential energy. But you haven't done anything yet. You haven't yet actualized that. It takes a little bit of falling to be able to convert that potential energy into kinetic energy. It needs to be extracted. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm giving you moments in life which are going to be called nisayon, not punishment. There are going to be moments where a person, we'll call it a crucible, where a person is able to extract that energy. It is interesting that the Ramban therefore says in the beginning of the next paragraph, therefore, midazu, this midah, is Hashem's goodness, not Hashem's negativity or judgment. That's the way he looks at it. Very hard to see from the inside, folks. Very hard to see from the inside. Usually it's afterwards. I mentioned this beforehand, but the research has been done. There's a website that Penn hosts called Authentic Happiness, which is a lot of research about positive psychology. And they have tens of thousands of responses about all kinds of things about optimism, flow, you know, happiness, character, the VIA, character strengths, numerous, and tens of thousands of people respond. So they've got a lot of information that's welled up in there. In fact, the U.S. Army has used Penn and the researchers at Penn to be able to research the Army, which is a database of 1.1 million soldiers. So we have there's a lot of information. So what they did was they decided to try a new experiment where they sent out a questionnaire about people. They asked people who have been through the 10 most radically traumatic events that people can go through, terrible things, you know, Rachmana Litzlan, the loss of a loved one, being imprisoned, disease, all the terrible things that people can go through. And they asked people if they've been through these things on the list. And then what they did is, because they have all this information, they already have their information, they contrasted the average happiness of this group to the average happiness of people who had not been through this. Interesting, right? And they found that actually the average happiness of people who have been through terrible trauma is higher than people who are living an average lifestyle. Now, that does not mean to say that a person should put themselves in Iraq, right? This does not, he's not advocating for that. But what he found, in fact, was that people who had been through two such events had even a happy, self-recorded happiness in life than people who have been through one. The research is going in the direction of what's called PTG. We all know about PTSD, right? Post-traumatic stress disorder. There's something called post-traumatic growth. Post-traumatic growth means to say that when a person looks back on a terrible event in life, a traumatic and horrible event, sometimes a person realizes with the right attitude that that moment was actually the greatest crucible of formation of who they were. They had the things they had to go through. And they would never in life ask for it. But that's what they went through. They actually formed who they were. The Ramban is saying, this is the notion of what Nisayon is with the right perspective. Aaron Avinu did not want to give up his son in no way or fashion. But nonetheless, this is what it brought out in him, that capacity in reality, not just in potential. That's the Ramban's idea. Okay, so it had to be as close to reality as it could possibly be. Let's flip this around to the exact opposite. Okay, so right now the Ramban said, what's most important is actual versus potential, right? Actual is versus potential. That's why Hashem gives us sometimes these terrible opportunities in life called nisyanas. However, let's flip it exactly the opposite way around. The Pachad Yitzhak Rav Hutner says the following. Let's think about this. Isn't it interesting that the exact location of where the Aker took place is going to be the location in the future where, right, where the Beis HaMikdash is going to exist? And in fact, the Gemara tells us that it's exactly the place of the Mizbeach is where Avraham Avinu built his Mizbeach. Isn't that fascinating? So the Mizbeach itself, for all generations, is going to be in the same place, although apparently we never existed there. According to some historical sources, you know, and although the UN has said, you know, it's a protected society, Palestinian thing, you know, unfortunately they forgot to read the Bible or look at the archaeology or think. But nonetheless, this is where it all comes from. It comes from Avraham Avinu. And if you think about it, it's the same model. Isn't it interesting? Why is it that we bring karbonos in the first place? Why is it that we take an animal and put it up on the altar? After all, you're the one who may flip the switch on Shabbos, right? Like, the poor animal had just spent its life grazing in the field, and there you take Betsy. She is now on the Mizbeach, and you, who perpetrated this avlo, whatever it was, are sitting there happily eating the meat, right? So what's, depending on what kind of korban it is. So not so simple. So the Ramban tells at the beginning of Sefer Vayikra, the reason is because when a person looks at this, you know, this pretty graphic scene, you know, the innards are taken out, and it's a very serious scene when you shecht an animal. It's not like, you know, this is not for the faint-hearted. And so when this is happening, a person is supposed to be imagining that they are there, so to speak, right? They, it's as if there's something about they deserve some sort of death, so to speak. They deserve some sort of sacrifice in themselves, but the animal is supplanting them and is on the Mizbeach. Well, isn't that interesting, says the Rav Hudna? Well, isn't that exactly what happened at the Akedah? There was somebody who was supposed to be on the Mizbeach, but ultimately an animal took its place. Right, took his place. Isn't that exactly what happened? And that becomes the model for future generations. But how does that work exactly? You know, like, so what's the mechanics of that? We see that there's definitely a pattern over here, but right, why should the animal, is it enough to come that close to the Mizbeach? So here's his argument. Fascinating, fascinating insight into Karbonis and into the Akedah as a whole. So what we're going to do is the following. We're not looking through the entire paragraph because it's very long, but we're going to go through from about one third of the way down. I apologize, I did not put an arrow, but it says Ela by the period. It's towards a third of the way down. The first one on the line is Tamura, and by the period in the middle of the line says Ela. It's Ela Shezeu Mashenisha Me'akeda. Hanachonos Lemesiros Nefesh, Nechsheves Umiskabeles Kemesiros Nefesh Atzma. He says what we gain from the Akedah was the willingness, was the potential of sacrifice, which is what came with us through generations. Dafka mima shelo yotza hanachanus shel Avraham Avinu lepoal nishara lanu zechus ha'aked ledoros. His willingness was the sacrifice that we took with, not the sacrifice itself. The kavana v'nachanus b'da'as l'misirus nefesh miskabeles k'ilu ha'adam masar atzmo b'poal mamish. That willingness is almost as if it was that the person sacrificed themselves. Let's say that it did happen. Let's say that Avraham Avinu had shechted Yitzhak and somehow his progeny had arrived in from a different direction. The potential of sacrifice would not have been invested into our DNA, into our spiritual DNA. But tzrichim anu ladas, ki we should know, ki kasher anu medabrim al Avraham v'Yitzhak, hakavana hi lanu. When we look at the Akedah, it's not about what happened historically, these years ago. It's what happens to us. We don't have access to their plot in Gan Eden. If they got a bigger plot because he'd sacrifice his son and Yitzhak had sacrificed his life, that would have no bearing on us. So he said, look, if Avram had sacrificed Yitzchak, we would have nothing to do with that. We would have no access to it. But what did Avram Avinu do? Avram showed in his heart, in his potential, that he was prepared to sacrifice. Well, that's something we do have access to, right? We don't sacrifice our children. Loi also alibi, Hashem says. But, Rachmon and Islan, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu does ask from us potential sacrifices in life. Are we willing? How willing are we to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our hearts? Well, Avraham Avinu showed he had it. Well, we can also have that. So, interestingly enough, Rav Hutton is saying exactly the opposite psychologically. He's saying it is the willingness which gave us the ability of the willingness to be able to do that. Very different from the Ramban altogether. He says it would have not been helpful for us if Avraham and Yitzhak, if it had gone through, if that Akedah had gone through. It was specifically because it did not go through. And we have something to do with that. We now do have access to Avraham Avinu. Very different to the Ramban. Well, I want to take this out into more. This is very ethereal still. Let's sort of take this into direct ideas in just a moment. So without doing these inside, just to finish this and explain this a little more. The question that everybody asks is that, you know, everybody talks about, you know, this is Avram and Avram's test, and Avram was so wonderful and brilliant, and but at the end of the day, the person losing his life, thank you very much, was Yitzchak, right? So Sarah also suffered terribly. But at the end of the day, the person who's putting his neck out on that Mizbeach was Yitzchak. So why is it that there's so much focus on Avraham? So interestingly, very creatively, the Ibn Ezra says, and this is one of the famous places where he diverges from Chazal. Chazal tells us that Yitzchak was 37. 37-year-old boy makes big decisions, right? And therefore, that would have been a terrible sacrifice. So he says that Ibn Ezra couldn't have been that he was 37. He says you have two factors. One is that he needed to be big enough to be able to log the logs, right? He needed to be able to pull the wood up the mountain, because that's what the Torah tells us. On the other hand, it cannot possibly be that this child knew what was going on, or otherwise he would have rebelled, or it would have been his Nisayon, right? So he says it must be that he was a younger boy. He puts it at I believe the age he says is 13 years old. He's a young teenager, right? Shekorov liyud gimel shanim. He must have been an early teenager, because then he did not have either the cognition or the, we'll call it, the forwardness to fight or to challenge this. So therefore, he almost sublimates Yitzhak's role in this, because otherwise it doesn't seem to work with Avraham Avinu ultimately being the hero of the Akedah. This is what Ben Ezra does. Why is he doing this? Because it can't be that Yitzhak is out of the equation and Avraham is the focal point, if Yitzhak's the one losing his life. That's what Ibn Ezra does. It must be. That's the way he suggests. Rabbeinu B'chaya says, well, you know, it's interesting. Rabbeinu B'chaya, when we're looking at this, says, why is it that Avraham Avinu was the one who was tested? Well, he says, because it's one thing sacrificing one's own life, but it's another thing sacrificing, Rachmana Lisan, somebody else's life, who's extremely dear to a person, because in the end of the day, that person will have to live with that ghost the rest of their life. Right? Meaning, Avraham Avinu, for Yitzhak, it's a terrible, terrible test to do this, but Avraham Avinu is going to his dying day, not be able to sleep every single night of his life because of this, if this would go through. That's a terrifying thing. And unfortunately, we have this. I'm saying we've witnessed this in near history, where the terrible decisions that had to be made. In the Crusades, there was a response asked by people who asked about shechting their own children, they should not be taken and either killed, tortured, used, or converted to Christianity as the Crusaders, the thugs who would walk through town, right? It would be terrible questions that we have to say that Israel has had to deal with. Says the Rabbeinu B'chaya, Avraham Avinu's test was great, and that's why Hashem spoke to Avraham, and he didn't speak to Yitzchak. Oh, and if, let's say it was Avraham Avinu's test, he should have said, Avraham, sacrifice yourself, right? Never thought about that, right? Sacrifice yourself. The answer is no. The greatest test was having to do it and live with it. But let's go a little further. What's the mechanics of that? So there is an interesting, in order to just develop this idea a little further, there is a Gemara which tells us that when a person comes to convert to Judaism, we try to dissuade them. Judaism is not into proselytizing, it's not into changing the world, everybody to be Jewish. And this is one of the things the Gemara Yavamos tells us we need to tell them. So take a look at source 8. This is Rav Chaim Zaitchik in the Priya Aretz, quotes the Gemara Yavamos. It says, Ger Shebol Iskayer, a convert who is interested in converting to Judaism, Bizmana Zeh Obrim Loi, Maro Isa Shebol Iskayer. Why would you want Judaism? Iato Yodea She Yisra Bizmana Zeh Devuyim, Dechufim, Sechufim, Uterofim, Vyusurim, Look at 2 weeks ago, a guy in Brooklyn, a fellow who's been in Brooklyn, walking across the street and beaten because he's a Jew. Right? There's a fellow in New Jersey who just died after 6 months in a vegetative state by being run over by a person. No, never knew this person. Never, Abdul something or other in New Jersey. I'm saying, like, we are hunted down wherever we are. And what nation goes through this? Why do you want to join this club? That's the first thing we say. Then, im Omer Yodani Vaini Kadai Makablinos, they say, you know, I know them. I still want to, even though I'm not worthy, but I still want to. So then you say Makablinos Samiyad, Moidinos Mixas Mitzas Kalas, Mixas Mitzas Chamuras, Moidinos Avonek, I don't think that's the correct word. Avoin Leket Shikhapeya Bemaisa Oni. So you say, you know, you give him some of the Kalas, the Chamuras, the heavier and the less heavy mitzvahs, and you say, you know, there's these mitzvahs which you need to do, leket shechapeah, which are, you know, sort of like when you're in the field, you leave a little bit of grain behind for the poor people. That's what's involved in Judaism. Kibbel malino soimiyad. If the person accepts and they're male, they get a bris milah. Okay, and then it goes through that. So Rav Zaitchik says a very basic question. He's like, usually it's supposed to be climactic, right? So meaning to say, like, let's do the easy questions first, right? Check. Good. Okay. Well, they're going to kill you. So they're going to beat you in the streets. Okay. Yeah. Fine. Okay. Let's go. Sign right here. So, but it's strange, right? We tell them a pretty serious. This is a pretty serious deterrent. And then if they're in, and it's like, okay, now what about lechashichaper? No. Sometimes we misunderstand it. There are people, and there are many people who have a burning fire inside, and should they, Rachman Litzan, come to that precipice, and people say, your values or your life, there are many people who have it within them, and they don't know they have it within them, who would say, you know what, I believe in this, I'm going to stand for this. A person is willing to take things. But what about when the commitment is not a once in a lifetime? The commitment is on a daily basis. The commitment means to say it's your checkbook, right? It's your grain which you own, which you invested in, which you put into the ground, and now somebody else has rights to it. In fact, the rights they have are pretty strong. Meaning, if you read Mishnah's payot, what you have to leave behind. On a day-to-day basis, in fact, he says climactically, this is more of a climax. Is to live with it is much harder. To live with the sacrifice on a daily basis. In fact, the Shlah goes on to say, the Rav Horowitz says in Ner Mitzvah, take a look at the second paragraph in Source 9. He says, we need to establish this in ourselves. Haskama muchletes b'chol eis shenikra akriya shma, she'onu maskimim nimsor kol ta'avoseinu v'chishke libeinu, v'chol nafshenu min ha'evorim, v'ad netilas ha'nevesh, v'amamon al yichud kedush ha'shmoy v'kabalas malchus. So when we say Hashem Echad, when we say Hashem is one, that means to say Hashem is one in every aspect of our life. He says that means to say that we should have a willingness to accept sacrifice, whether it be our lives and that willingness, but not just our lives, whether it be difficulty, inconvenience, indulgence, right, money, whatever else is going to come along the way, those sacrifices are included into that sacrifice that we're talking about. We should imagine, he says to ourselves, that somebody tests us, that somebody says to us, you know, if this means so much to you, what are you going to do to show me? And imagine such a situation and go through with it. Will we, if somebody mocks what we do and our values, are we willing to stand up and look them in the face and say, I still stand for this? Whatever it is, embarrassment, discomfort, missing lunch, whatever else it is. That's what we mean when we're killed for you all day. It doesn't mean to say that we're being killed. It means those small sacrifices are almost mini deaths. There are many sacrifices, there are many killings in ourselves, which is actually more meaningful because they happen more often. They're more frequent, they're more real. We say with all our souls. Coming back to Rav Hutna, this is what the Shlah is saying. It's Avraham Avinu laid out for us a framework where it wasn't about laying one's life down on the railway tracks. That didn't happen. He showed us that a person is able to be willing to do that. Where do we do that? We do that every day when we say Kriya Shema. How do we do that? Well, we don't have to imagine the train tracks. We can imagine smaller victories. We can imagine smaller sacrifices. And we do them. The question is do we embrace them? And do we aspire to be able to sacrifice for Judaism? There are so many opportunities in life where we're mocked, where we have to stand up for things. This is what the Shlach says is what Avraham Avinu gave us. So two very different ideas over here. One a little more extended. The idea of the Ramban, which is actualizing potential, and the idea of Rav Hutna is saying that no, it's not. It's about actually being able to be willing, which is what the Akeda provided for us. Just two different meridians in understanding this. Thank you for taking the time. Rabbi Chanan Mekash Morat Zakolish Baruch Hu Zakolis Zol Ficha Chibol and Torah Mitzvah Shneim Adonai Kofetz Manzi Koy Agdil Torah V'Yadir. Many shall rise and remain on the earth.